From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, July 17, 2017. And on this day, owners of the family-owned daily newspaper, the Lewiston Sun-Journal, have announced the sale of their company to Maine Today Media, the parent company of the Portland Press-Herald. Maine schools taking on responsibilities they've never had to pick up before, from providing extra food to helping clean students' clothes. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Owners of the family-owned daily newspaper, the Lewiston Sun-Journal, and 16 other publications in Maine have announced the sale of their company to Maine Today Media, the parent company of the Portland Press-Herald. As Susan Sharon reports, there are no expected layoffs, and both newsrooms will continue to operate separately.
Steve Costello, vice president of the Sun Media Group, says it was a tough decision to let go. The Sun Journal has been part of his family's business for four generations, since the late 1800s. But Costello says ultimately his brothers and sisters felt it was the right thing to do for the future competitiveness of the organization.
You know, we've spent a number of years growing from one newspaper in Lewiston to 17 different publications, and we've kind of built scale as best as we can, but it really needs to scale up even further to offer some of the digital things that are necessary moving forward, and I think that's what the new ownership will allow.
Over the past few years, Sun Media has partnered with Reed Brower, the owner of Maine Today Media, on various projects ranging from printing and transportation to digital services. And Costello says it became clear that the two companies share common values, such as a commitment to community journalism and to their staffs. Terms of the deal are not being disclosed, and when it becomes final August 1st, Costello says none of Sun Media's 225 employees is expected to lose their jobs, but he and his family members will be stepping down.
I have three other members, siblings that work with me, a sister and two brothers, and we have a sister who does not work in the company, but her husband actually works here. Two of the family members are staying on a little bit longer in the transition, and then the rest of us will be moving on.
Reed Brower, who purchased Maine Today Media in 2015, could not immediately be reached for comment, but he told the Sun Journal that readers should not expect to see a lot of changes. "I don't believe in prosperity through cutting," Brower told the paper. "We think that we're taking over a fine product. We're not looking to dismantle it." Maine Today Media CEO Lisa DeSisto, who will take over as CEO of the Sun Journal, the Forecaster, and the other weekly publications, says there's a reason for that.
You know, part of the value of the company are the brands, right? Because of the relationships that the readers have with the individual brands of our newspapers across Maine Today Media and the Sun Media Group. So we would be foolish to tamper with any of that.
The newsrooms will remain separate, and DeSisto says she expects to continue the healthy competition between the Sun Journal, the Portland Press-Herald, and its sister papers, the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel.
But I do think that there'll be ways for us to collaborate. So it's going to be, we're going to be competitive cousins. That's the way I look at it.
Brower's purchase of the Sun Media Group continues his unusual pattern of expansion in the newspaper business at a time when other news operations are shrinking. Last year, he and a partner purchased two papers in Vermont. He also owns Courier Publications in Rockland and Alliance Press in Brunswick. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
There are well over $1 billion in bond proposals pending before the Maine legislature, but only a fraction of that amount is likely to go before the voters for approval. As Mallory reports, lawmakers are constrained by the budget and by politics.
The budget recently passed under the duress of a state shutdown includes enough money to support just $150 million a year in new bonds.
If you know, we have a different mix between one year and the other, or if we go above that number, we're going to have to recompute what our projected debt service will be, and figure out how to pay for that.
Westbrook Democrat Representative Drew Cuttine co-chairs the Appropriations Committee, which is talking with legislative leaders and the governor over the next few days to see what mix of borrowing is politically achievable. And complicating that discussion is the fact that Governor Paul LePage wants bonds for research and development, student loan forgiveness, and $100 million a year for transportation projects. Commissioner David Bernhard told lawmakers that funding is crucial to road and bridge repairs and construction, as well as airports, ports, and rail projects.
Maine has roughly double the number of state highway miles of roads as New Hampshire, yet our federal transportation funding is about the same. This means Maine has about double the number of miles per capita to maintain and about half the funding per mile to do it.
Norway Republican Representative Tom Windsor is the lead for House Republicans on the panel, and he says while there's strong support for the transportation bond, there are also strong concerns about increasing the state's overall debt beyond what is paid for in the current budget.
We're going to have a disappointed governor or a disappointed legislature. No, seriously, though, it's always a balancing act, no matter what we do, and we try to look at the needs and the capacity.
Windsor says the state does not have the resources to meet all of the needs identified in the bond mix, and that some of the borrowing may not actually meet those needs. He says the proposal to forgive student debt for those that stay in Maine for 5 years, for example, does not address the root problem, which is the huge increase in the cost of higher education over the years.
In 1962, when I graduated high school, my tuition at the University of Maine would have been $400. If you adjust it over time for inflation to 2017, that's only $3,200. Current tuition is $8,300.
Committee co-chair Drew Cuttine says some bonding decisions may have to wait for the January session because of the high bar for state borrowing that's set in the state constitution.
Ultimately, this has to pass through the legislature with two-thirds. So, you know, things that have broad support, not just by one party, but across party lines, have a lot more chance of success.
And once the proposed borrowing does get the two-thirds vote in both the House and Senate, the voters get the final say at referendum. Most bonds proposed by the legislature do get voter approval, but some past proposals dedicated to higher education and corrections have come up short at the ballot box. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine schools have long said they need more money. One reason, educators say, is that they are taking on responsibilities they've never had before, providing extra food, medical services, and even washers and dryers to clean students' clothes. And as Robbie Feinberg reports, schools in rural Maine need the most help, but often lack the tax base to pay for it.
I'll tell you, Mrs. Lambert, Adrian is right in the game of school today. She could be a teacher's assistant.
For Rumford Elementary School teacher Sarah Lambert, the day may start in the classroom, but it often ends in a room not much bigger than a closet.
This is our little pantry room.
As in food pantry, open once a month for any community member to use. First opened 4 years ago, Lambert says it's become an important resource in a town with a declining population, and in which nearly 85% of children are eligible for free and reduced price lunch.
It's definitely sort of taken on more in the past couple of years, I think, because of how many families utilize it. So the other month when we had 20, that was when we found out that the other food pantry just shut down. Now having one of those taken away is, you know, it's difficult.
So this is where the washer and dryer are. And this is where
just across the hall from the food pantry, Lambert also points out a washer and dryer, the result of a years-long effort by Rumford's principal and school nurse to raise the money to purchase the set. Lambert says the school began seeing students showing up to class with stains, many wearing clothes from the day before. The school now provides some clothes for students and washes anything dirty for them. Lambert says it's a way to help kids feel more comfortable at school and gently help some families in need.
And we wash it here, but just to try and cycle them through so that they feel confident and comfortable with themselves, because until we meet those basic needs, like, they're really not ready for learning.
you know, I think a lot of schools are thinking about this from the perspective of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Catherine Biddle, who studies rural education at the University of Maine at Orono, is referring to the motivational theory of psychologist Abraham Maslow, who created a hierarchy of basic human needs.
You have to have the basic need met. You know, kids can't be hungry or, you know, they won't be able to learn. When the community is meeting fewer of those needs, the school has to do more.
However, Biddle says finding money to support these efforts is often most difficult in communities that are losing jobs and people. And when a community loses tax revenue and students, Biddle says, the schools often have less money to help.
To then take on the burden of, like, school funding and the increased need for schools to get funding, I think becomes really, really, really challenging. Even while the population, you know, has greater and greater needs that need to be met.
Rumford has found money from the federal government and also got a grant from the Hannaford supermarket chain. Other organizations have also led similar community initiatives, such as Washington County's Community Caring Collaborative. At the state level, the legislature 2 years ago approved the creation of pilot projects for so-called community schools, which serve as a hub to identify the needs of families and work with organizations to provide assistance for things like heat, housing, adult education, and medical care. Experts say thousands of these kinds of schools are slowly growing in places like Oakland and Boston. But in Maine, there have been few formal initiatives to create these kinds of schools.
And for us, it was the perfect next step. It was, how do we call a school a community resource and formally find ways to make those links and connections, not only with what the school can do, but what else is happening in the community that supports kids and learning.
Rick Colpitz is the superintendent of the Oxford Hills School District, which received two of the state's three grants. Colpitz says the district is using the money at two of its elementary schools to hire family support advocates who will visit the homes of dozens of kindergartners over the next few months.
Finding out what the needs in the home are, and then scanning out across the community to find out who can meet those needs. And I do think it's stronger because now you have all the organizations within the community working together to provide that service, rather than the school trying to do its piecemeal piece.
A similar strategy is used by the district's Head Start preschool program, with some reported success. District officials say this past fall, less than half of their preschoolers met standards for language, cognition, and emotional development. But by the spring, more than 90% met the standards. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, July 17, 2017. Thanks to Fred Bever, Patty White, Keith Shortall, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.